Hannah Flint. She's one of the leading film critics of her generation. She is also the author of the intimate, revealing, and cinematic, literally, memoir, Strong Female Character, What Movies Teach Us. In the book, Hannah explores her career through the life and a lens of film. Since she has British and North African roots, Hannah is especially interested in how the movie industry portrays women and ethnic minorities. She joins us now to talk about her journey to being her own strong female character and why it was important to structure her memoir this way.
There's so much I've learned from watching movies that have taught me, for better and for worse, you know, how to be a woman, a woman of color, a person with Arab heritage. And I suppose it, in a way, I kind of wanted to write a book that maybe if I had read when I was in my teens, it would have made me feel a little bit seen and a little bit better and understand that maybe some things that we see on screen are a little bit distorted and we don't have to, you know, subscribe to every stereotype.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very well said. You talk about watching Disney's 1992 film Aladdin when you were 16, and you say that it was a major awakening. How so?
Seeing Aladdin for the first time was the first time I'd really seen someone who looked like me, or as close to a mixed kid of English, Arab, North African heritage, who shared some of my features, could look like from a character created by white men in LA. And watching Aladdin and looking at Princess Jasmine compared to the other Disney princesses, just how sexualized she is. And of course, you know, when I was a young kid, you know, I didn't really have the language, but you kind of knew what was up. There's that weird sex slave scene where Jafar puts her in a red bikini. And I say in the book, you know, she could give Princess Leia's gold bikini a run for its money, just how sexualized it was.
Jafar? I never realized how incredibly handsome you are.
That's better. Now, pussycat, tell me more about myself.
You're tall and dark.
And you've got to think, this is a young girl who's 15, has never left the palace. So the idea that she was able to use her feminine sexual wiles in order to try and trick Jafar into letting Aladdin sneak in seems kind of absurd, right? It sort of suggests that anyone who is from that part of the world is exotic and therefore kind of highly sexualized. And so, you know, I saw Jasmine, but as much as I kind of loved seeing that and seeing my brother reflected in Aladdin, there was something quite off about it. So, you know, Belle and Ariel, Little Mermaid, were still kind of my favorites. And then I suppose over the years, when you get older and you kind of learn a little bit more about stereotypes, learn about Arab representation, you look at kind of Orientalism, which obviously a famous book written by Edward Said, talking about the way that the West often portrays the East and, you know, the Middle East and taboo and, you know, North Africa. There's that distorted image that's basically telling us this is the way that part of the world is. And then from that early thing, suddenly that just blossoms, right? And suddenly we can't shake that stereotype until, you know, you come to this time of year, 2023 now, 2022, when I was writing it, and you hope that actually more people are talking out and kind of countering those kind of negative, reductive stereotypes.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. During the COVID lockdown, you discovered a documentary called Business as Usual, which has some strange parallels to your own life. Can you tell us about this?
Yeah, it's hard to find films that are about Tunisia or, you know, set in Tunisia by filmmakers, because in the documentary maker, similarly, his mother went to Tunisia on holiday, had a relationship with a local man, and he was the product of that romance. And then it's kind of about how, I suppose, him trying to understand his father, who also fathered other children with white women from Europe, and trying to learn a bit about his heritage, but also, I suppose, kind of understanding whether he can have a relationship with his father. Again, that doesn't feel, I suppose, transactional. And certainly for me, it's been interesting over the last few years where my biological father has tried to get in touch, but it's a heavy subject. You know, you go through your whole life without someone and you're kind of like, what do I need from this relationship? For a long time, I didn't try to go to learn or go to Tunisia because I felt like they were intertwined, my father and the country. But then watching that documentary certainly made me feel I can have a connection to Tunisia without having him included, or at least while I'm not really ready to kind of open that Pandora's box. And, you know, I have to say last year I went to Tunisia for the first time and it was the most magical experience going to Carthage at Sidi Bou Said and even getting to travel down to Tozeur where they shot Star Wars. And so as a massive Star Wars fan, that meant so much to me to be able to visit some of the sets and see the places and learn about how rich Tunisia is when it comes to providing a backdrop to so many of the movies that I love.
That's great. That's great to hear. Let's talk about the Arab stereotypes in movies, what you call the 3B syndrome. Can you tell us about the 3B syndrome?
The 3Bs are billionaires, bombers, and belly dancers, which are kind of the stereotypes that Arab characters often get levied with. So we get the billionaires, which originally was kind of the sheikh characters, and obviously that started back in the silent film. Most recently, we saw like Wonder Woman 1984, which is quite a shame because Wonder Woman had a really great character. He was an actor who became one of the kind of party of Wonder Woman and Steve Trevor, who kind of was a hero. And then we get to Wonder Woman 1984 and you've got like Amir Waqed playing an oil baron who suddenly wants to like use his wish to take back the country, and he's just a wicked character, and it's like, oh God, please, Patty, I thought we did so well. And then obviously the bombers is terrorists, you know, and we do go in phases with that. You know, there was a time when it was, you know, it was Russian and then we had IRA, but you know, the consistent one, and that kind of that goes hand in hand with what's going on in politics as well. You know, I point to how the Palestinian terrorists kind of really became the main thing. You know, True Lies is a film that I used to love when I was a kid, but then you kind of grow up and you're like, wow, this is like a really bad stereotype of Palestinian people. And there's been plenty of films that have that similar, use that similar vein, because Palestinians are very rarely positioned as the underdogs in this kind of conflict, especially on screen.
This is a communique from Crimson Jihad. You have seen a demonstration of our power. Do not force us to destroy this city, and do not try to use force against us. We are all prepared to die. With one turn of that key, 2 million of your people will die instantly.
What key?
That key! Who's taken the key?
And then, of course, when it comes to women, we've basically had women in the background, in harems. They are kind of there, overly sexualized, or they're kind of, it's kind of interesting. It's either the Madonna or the whore trope, which obviously happens a lot in the wider conversation about female representation. But you either have women completely covered up, wearing, you know, burqas, wearing niqabs, or you have them quite sexualized, wearing the belly dancer outfits. Certainly in the spy movies like James Bond, that's popped up.
How are you staying long in Beirut?
It depends. Really do have a magnificent abdomen.
So again, it's this distorted image, and people suddenly become, you know, we become afraid. Certainly when I was growing up, and you see a lot of negative stereotypes of Arabs, whether it's in Raiders of the Lost Ark or in Indiana Jones and the Holy Grail, where Arab characters are pretty much seen as idiots or bad guys or nefarious characters. Or Back to the Future, where they've got the idiot Libyan terrorists at the beginning. This, growing up on that, anytime I really saw an Arab was negatively. So then you have this negative, you know, especially Arab men. So suddenly this kind of idea of my father went from this like distant prince, you know, could be from Agrabah, to suddenly this kind of bad guy who I didn't want to be associated with.
Yeah. Can you point to one movie that has taught you the most about yourself and as a result helped you to accept yourself?
I have to say, Love and Basketball. That really made me accept myself as kind of an assertive person. Because that film by Gina Prince-Bythewood, it was her directorial debut. You know, I used to play basketball when I was like from the age of 11 up until when I finished university. But I think what I loved about that movie was there's this woman. I'm not African-American. I'm like a mixed, you know, kid from the UK living in Doncaster. So there's a lot about our experience that's quite different. But she was a woman of color who loved sports, who had that tomboy quality, who didn't always have, who was dressed in sweats. You know, she could get dressed up, but she also was really happy wearing her light tracksuits. And she was so passionate and quite assertive and blunt about things. I think so often women are kind of, if you're like that, you're seen as difficult or bossy.
Don't tempt me, I'm warning you.
I'm warning you. If you don't start a bad attitude, no one's gonna recruit you.
Please. You jump in some guy's face, you talk smack, and you get a pat on your ass. But because I'm a female, I get told to calm down and act like a lady. I'm a ball player, okay?
For me, seeing Monica go through this whole thing where she had her heart broken, but she kept on working hard to do what she wanted to do, what she wanted to play. She wanted to play basketball for as a career. And, you know, spoiler alert for people who haven't seen Love and Basketball, but she ends up getting her dream. She gets the basketball career and she gets the guy. And, you know, maybe I didn't become a professional basketball player, but, you know, I wanted to write about movies and I wanted to be in the position I am today. And that was a lot of like sacrifice and hustle and, you know, not shrinking myself, but also just learning how to be part of a team and being able to experience all of these emotions. So seeing Monica in that film, that really just inspired me to just like be okay with who I am. I felt really seen watching that and knowing that I can be this strong female character. Isn't just literally about being strong. It's about being vulnerable and accepting that maybe you're not the perfect person the way you handle these things, but just because your emotions are a bit messy and you might not be, you know, the damsel that's kind of idealized. We constantly idealize that actually you're still worthy and you have value and you're real.
Yeah, exactly. Hannah Flint, thank you very much for joining us. Congratulations on Strong Female Character. It's a beautifully written memoir.
Thank you so much.
Hannah Flint is the author of Strong Female Character, What Movies Teach Us. You can find out more about Hannah and what she's learned from films at wpr.org/beta.
And I think as the show went on, I think it was always good right out of the gate. But the more character, the more female characters they added, the richer that part of the show became.
Coming up, film and television critic Matt Soler-Seitz joins us to talk about how David Milch reinvented the Western genre with his masterful HBO series, Deadwood. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.